the near post. Messi to the net. Mamma mia! Ramel Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise.
And they knew that they would have to defend.
It's a Honduran connection.
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome into Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. This is COVID-19 show number 11 from the secret studios in my home. Last time I was in the Gow Media Studios and the ESPN 97.5 studios, all the way back to March 10th. And that night in studio, we had Josh Gardner, the former Major League Soccer player and local product, and Christine Nairn of the Houston Dash. They were in studio that night. That was the last time we did a game out of studio. Tyler Scott behind the glass tonight, as always. Tyler, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. How are you?
Buddy, you guys are doing yeoman's work. A lot of big applause for the producers and everybody getting us on the air throughout this time period. So thank you for all your hard work.
Well, I appreciate that.
We appreciate that. We got some good.
You're making me feel essential, Glenn.
Well, you are essential. We are all essential in some way. My case, I'm not sure yet, but I'll let the audience judge that if I'm essential or not. But you are definitely essential because I can't get on the air without you. So there we go. Also, my thanks to all those on the front lines, as always. So we can't thank people enough that are out there really risking it for us. And you know who you are. Nurses, doctors, you may be driving in a car right now. Truck drivers, those in grocery stores, EMTs, police, firemen, you name it, you know who you are. And I probably didn't name everybody. Streaming at ESPN975.com. Call in number 713-780-3776. What a group of guests tonight. Sam Stashkel of The Athletic, one of my favorite writers, always up on everything. He's going to talk about the opening of Major League Soccer potentially, what's going on in Orlando, what's going to happen in the summer with transfers potentially in MLS, if teams are really going to be pretty much sitting pat with what they have, and a number of things. So we'll talk with Sam. Ian Joy played in Germany with St. Pauli, so he knows the German experience. At Fox doing all the German League games along with Warren Barton. Those two are on the show tonight. Warren Barton also played at Newcastle United. And Dynamo president John Walker is going to join the show here as well tonight. So we all anticipated, and again, the number to call in, 713-780-3776. Show, as always, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. Whatever type of accident you get in, John and his firm will cover you, and they're going to work 24/7 nights and weekends for you. So thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We were all anticipating Saturday, Sunday, Monday, the return of the Bundesliga. Canary in the coal mine. First major team sport from a major soccer league to get back in action. And I will remind you again, the German Bundesliga. For those that are fans of other sports in this country, even Premier League fans may be surprised by this. The Bundesliga is the second highest attended league in the world after the NFL. That's, you know, you have to kind of take that into consideration. The NFL, less dates. The Bundesliga, more dates. 45,000 people a game. So to see the opening game between Dortmund and Schalke in an empty stadium in Dortmund, Germany, it's pretty wild. Having been in that stadium calling a Germany-U.S. game before the 2006 World Cup and going in that stadium to watch Germany train under then Jurgen Klinsmann, it was pretty interesting. And it did bring to light this term called ghost game. But we all knew this was coming. It seems like a lot of people were very shocked. What did you expect? And then why are we whining and whinging about audio? This is the sign of the times. And for those of you who want artificiality and piped-in noise and music, isn't life artificial enough right now? And why wouldn't you want to hear the players talking? Why wouldn't you want to hear the coaches talking? And by the way, some of the coaches were more talkative simply because players could hear them. When there's 80,000 people there, unless you're within earshot of the sideline or the touchline, nobody can hear anything. So it was fascinating. You could hear a ball struck. You could hear it echoing in the chasm of the stadium. And it was ghost-like. And it was a little soulless. And it did, like many people say, look like a training exercise. But at the end of the day, what did you really expect? Wasn't this a positive just to, you know, execute this amount of games in the last 3 days? 713-780-3776. It was a success. Now, I didn't think for a minute that the execution of the games, based on Bundesliga detail, based on my belief that everybody was going to follow protocol, because they know what's at stake. Germany knows what's at stake. The Bundesliga knows what's at stake. I didn't think there was going to be any problems executing the games. The real data and information is going to come out in time when players begin to get tested and retested after games. So we'll see if anybody has tested positive. And they have protocol in place if somebody has. But there was a uniqueness to these games, too. Of course, nobody wants it to be like this forever. But it is the now. And this is history. We're living history right now, both through sport, through our daily lives. 100 years from now, they're going to talk about COVID-19 when we're all dead. And what happened in this country. And the Bundesliga is going to keep track of their history and one day remind people that there were the ghost games. And I think we've also taken a lot of positive from this. I think a lot of people have to be feeling pretty good. Excited. The NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer. They were all looking at this. You know it. This was a team sport. This wasn't people in cars. This wasn't UFC or Ultimate Fighting or any of that. It's a lot of people that had to be. This is a team sport. 713-780-3776. What were your takeaways from the weekend? Now, the level of play based on challenges of preparing to due to COVID-19, got to really factor that in. And we saw some good football. We saw patches of it. Dortmund, Bayern, Leipzig, Leverkusen, Mönchengladbach all had good moments. Some teams were more up for the moment and adapted to the strangeness of it, I think, than others. And yes, again, the fans were missed. It was a ghost game. Referees don't have to deal with crowds and that element of pressure. Home teams could not rely on a push or the energy of a 12th man from supporters. Away teams probably gained advantage in less intimidating environments, I would say, in some cases. Team walkouts were separate. We saw that. We saw the social distancing on benches with masks. So it was executed positively by the Bundesliga and all involved. Have your say, 713-780-3776. The other beautiful thing about Germany, when listening to these games, you heard the commentators on a number of occasions mention 17-year-olds. Germany remains the best place for development. But when you're talking about the youth involved in these games and their ability to still draw 45,000 fans a game, reminds you that the club, the league, the club, and fan relationship is at its best in Germany. Nobody trumps them. Nobody's better than them. They're the best at it. A lot to be learned. All right, let's go to Dortmund over Schalke. That's the big one. We were all waiting for it. Here in the United States, the most watched Bundesliga match ever on FS1. Let's go to the Erling Haaland goal, Tyler, because this was a wonderful piece of transition play involving Haaland at the end getting the goal, but also Julian Brandt, Thorgan Hazard.
They knew that they would have to defend today with that very potent front line that Dortmund have got. Can they keep it up for the full 90, though? Hazard's ball! Haaland's 1-0! Classic piece of Dortmund attacking, breaks the deadlock. It can be so simple. A run, a pass, and a finish. Haaland is loaded with finishes. Dortmund's only goal of the game.
All right, so that is piped in celebration music after the goal. There's no question that's piped in. But that was a spectacular goal. Rafael Guerrero had two also for Dortmund. Haaland had that one. And Hazard, who was the replacement for the 17-year-old Gio Reyna, who was supposed to start. We were all pumped about that. He got hurt in warm-up, and then Hazard comes on and gets a goal and assist. Looks like his brother Eden. Weston McKennie for Schalke struggled. His teammates did. Now, I saw a lot of people, oh, McKennie played great. Work ethic and performance are two different things. That young man works all the time. I love the guy. It was a tough day for him playing in the six, and I'm not even sure that's his position because he's sometimes overly aggressive, and that's not a place where you really have to be calculated with your aggression. And I know he plays that position trying to step in and cut passes out to initiate counterattacks and transition play. It was a rough day because he was turned and chasing back to his own goal awful lot in that game. And so were his teammates. They were thoroughly dominated, Schalke. RB Leipzig, 1-1 with Freiburg. That was a good game. Manuel Gulde for Freiburg. They get the first goal in the 34th. Leipzig control the match, no question. Ends up a 1-1 draw. They get the tying goal from Danish international Christian Poulsen, 77th minute. That minute, you know, you kind of felt, watching it at home, they were going to get the game winner. But they didn't. They had a late, what they thought was a late game winner. It was overturned by VAR. The draw drops them to fourth place. And, of course, Tyler Adams playing in that game. Hoffenheim got knocked off 3-0 by Hertha Berlin. Paderborn and Dusseldorf 0-0. Augsburg go down to Wolfsburg 2-1. John Brooks playing solid. And then Bayern Munich, they would get their victory on Sunday. Let's take the penalty from Robert Lewandowski for Bayern Munich in their 2-0 victory.
Lewandowski in behind, arrows the ball into the middle, and Goretzka looking to pick up the loose ball, has won the penalty. Nevin Subotic is penalised.
Yeah, that was really sleepy from the Subotic. He didn't know that Goretzka was coming.
With a perfect opportunity to add to his tally, it's Lewandowski, makes no mistake. Bayern lead 5 minutes before half-time. Takes his tally to the season to 26.
Yeah, 26 goals, and he leads the Bundesliga, Robert Lewandowski. So they got the early penalty in that game. They would go on to get that result. And if we look at the table now in Germany, with that win, Bayern Munich now sits on 58 points to 54 for Dortmund. Borussia Mönchengladbach at 52. They leapfrog Leipzig at 51. And Leverkusen now making a real push for a Champions League place on 50 points. So a huge win for Leverkusen, who got two goals from Kai Havertz. And maybe we can play the goal call for Havertz, who had two in the air. And his coach actually came out after the game and said he didn't play well. So Havertz picking up a pair. He's a player that a lot of teams are looking at now. He's gotten six goals now in the second half of the season. He got his seventh and eighth. They were both aerial, but again, his manager after the game said he didn't play well. Well, here's the first goal of the game for him.
Diaby
who's got some speed, does very well. The header comes back and the first goal of the game is scored by Kai Havertz, the youngest player in Bundesliga history to score 30 Bundesliga goals. Surpassed Klaus Fischer recently, and there's another one for his tally.
Surpassing the great Klaus Fischer. Now that's going back a ways. What a striker he was for Schalke. So Havertz right now is being looked at by Liverpool. He's being looked at or linked to Manchester United as well and Arsenal. So we got our first good look at Kai Havertz. And that game, by the way, that's the largest ever viewership for a game on FS1. Taking a break. We're going to come back. Sam Stashko of The Athletic. He'll join us. Bayern Munich, by the way, under Hansi Flick now, have 34 points out of a possible 36 since he took over. It's pretty remarkable. Taking a break here. Show presented, as always, by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. They are bilingual. Personal injury attorneys. 713-322-HURT. Car accident, motorcycle, industrial. John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, has you covered. They'll work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. We'll take a break. I'll try to find my voice. We'll come back with Sam Stashko.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Coming back with Rat here. Lay it down. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 rolls on. Again, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm are presenting sponsors. We thank them a lot. It was a big return this past weekend with the Bundesliga. Excitement all around. They executed. Got the games done, which I think most of us would have thought they would have gotten done. But what happens next? The man we're going to talk to now writes for The Athletic, a very talented writer. Sam Stashko joins us now. Sam, how are you?
Glenn, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited that you're on the show. I always am. I very much... like I've said, love your writing. A lot of people around the country do, and I think you bring some critical thinking to it, which certainly from a healthy perspective when it comes to pressure in this country is needed. So thank you for doing that. The first thing I'm going to say is the Bundesliga return. What jumps off the top of your head?
Well, first off, thank you for those kind words. Very nice of you. Second, it was just, I mean, the biggest thing for me was just, it was nice to watch live soccer again. You know, I wasn't, not particularly invested one way or another in any of these Bundesliga teams, but it was nice to wake up on Saturday morning and check out Borussia Dortmund and Schalke and see some of that and see some of Leipzig and their game. And so that was kind of the biggest thing for me in terms of, you know, the broader implications. It seemed to go pretty well. You know, Dresden in the second division, they had a few players test positive before the games, and they're in quarantine for 2 weeks, and that's kind of throwing off the second division schedule, but it seemed like everything worked pretty well in the Bundesliga. You know, the atmosphere was certainly different, you know, not having any fans in the stadiums and being able to hear all the echoes and the kicks and players talking and things like that. Personally, I didn't mind it. I thought it kind of allowed me as a viewer to really kind of pick up on more things going on the field a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something I would want for the long term, certainly. But, you know, for a little while here, I think it's kind of an interesting thing. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, I know MLS, they were watching closely, and I'm sure they were encouraged by the fact that everything seemed to go pretty smoothly. One thing that I have heard, making some phone calls today and yesterday, is that, you know, if MLS does come back, and I'm sure we'll get into those conversations in a moment, I would expect a little bit more bells and whistles on the broadcast and maybe some crowd noise piped in or something like that than what we saw in Germany.
Oh, don't tell me that. I don't want the artificiality of crowd noise. We're artificial enough as it is over here. Why can't we relish the moment here of, look, this is what it is. Let's embrace it and put our arms around it. Let's not try to gin it up. I mean,
to be fair, it might not be crowd noise, but I would expect there to at least be some additional things in terms of maybe referees or coaches being mic'd up or field mics, things like that. That I don't think
I don't mind as much.
Yeah.
But if you put microphones in the right place, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. I mean,
yeah,
if we were better at German and French, we might have picked up a few more things. Now, by the way, if you want music during the game, Sam, I suggest you go to an NBA game.
Yeah, or, pull up Spotify and your phone.
All right, so listen, you're the man in the know when it comes to what MLS looks like on a return. We know some of the teams are back training now. I don't think they're in group training yet, but what does it look like now? I've heard a lot of mixed on Orlando.
Yeah, so have I. The league is working on a plan in close conjunction with Disney and ESPN to come back with a tournament in Orlando. Every team would be down there for 2 months or so, train for the first month, play for the second month, minimum of 5 games for every team, and then if you progress out of the group stage of this tournament, you would go on into a knockout stage. And, I think it's interesting. I think everyone, all parties involved, want to get back on the field if they can in some way, shape, or form. But I'm not sure that everyone is convinced that this way makes sense for a variety of reasons. One being that, it would require all the players, all the coaches, all the staff members traveling down to Orlando to be quarantined in this hotel, the Coronado Springs Resort, which is owned by Disney. For the entire duration that they're down there, their families would not be allowed to join them. So they wouldn't be able to see them. And there's just a lot of complications that come with that. Carlos Vela, I believe his wife, is pregnant. If I'm remembering, Instagram correctly. Mm-hmm. And in the announcement there from a couple of months ago, is he going to leave her for 2 months, to go play in a weird little tournament in Orlando while she's pregnant at home in LA?
During a crisis, by the way.
Exactly. And that situation applies to,
a lot of people.
A number of players around the league, right? There are some players that I've been told whose partners, wives, or girlfriends are due in June or July when they would be in Orlando. What do those guys do? What do guys who are immunocompromised? Chris Odoi-Achim, Matt Lampson, both cancer survivors. Are they going to go down there?
Great point.
So there's just a lot of things that still need to be worked out. And the pay cut is another one of those, the pay cut that MLS and MLSPA are talking about. So we'll see. I was talking to a GM earlier today. He was convinced that it's going to happen. I was talking to a prominent agent. Not 10 minutes later, he was convinced that there's no chance it's going to happen. So opinions are all over the place. It's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out.
I mean, and we're on the timeline of the virus. Let's face it. A lot of this stuff is pretty hypothetical. I mean, is there a real move at some point that MLS teams believe, even after a tournament like this in Orlando, that they will get back into their stadiums? How much belief is there in that? How much confidence in that?
I think that varies, right? I think some people are hopeful of that. I think other people are thinking that maybe this Orlando thing could be the entire season. And, the virus might come back a little harder in the fall, and things might have to shut down again. No one really knows. That's the case with kind of everything going on right now, is no one really knows what's going to happen. So projecting out even a week is tough to do. Projecting out a few months is damn near impossible. But I would say the hope is that they play in Orlando, do that for, a month of training, a month of games, and then they're able to return to home markets and start play in home cities. There wouldn't be fans there most likely, but at least the players could be at home with their family.
Sam Stachkal of The Athletic joining us. So the tournament in Orlando, I mean, what would the incentive be there? Would this mostly be about getting teams fit and just kind of getting back out there and moving in the hopes that ultimately there is going to be more sort of quote-unquote league play?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is that, you know, we might see a CONCACAF Champions League berth at stake, right? The Open Cup's going to be taking place, so it could replace the berth that goes to the winner of that, usually. So there might be that. There might be a cash prize. There's any number of ways that they could put some meaning into it. But really, I think what this comes down to, for me and from people that I've spoken to, a lot of this is just kind of wanting to get back to take care of TV partners, and specifically ESPN. You know, all of these places that the league is going to be involved with, the resort that they're staying at, the ESPN Wide World of Sports that they'll be playing at, everything is owned by Disney, which of course owns ESPN. And they've been working closely, the league and ESPN, on kind of this plan. From what I understand, ESPN would broadcast a lot of these games if they were to happen. And, you know, the TV deal, the national TV deal for MLS is up after the 2022 season. And the next one is super, super important in terms of the trajectory of the league between 2023 and 2026, when the World Cup comes to the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, in terms of what the league can look like and how much they'll be able to capitalize on the momentum from the 2026 World Cup. This would be a good way to kind of keep a longtime league partner and ESPN happy, to kind of throw them a bone and maybe build up some goodwill before those negotiations in between the 2022 and 2023 season.
At Sam Stajskal, it's SamStajskal. At Sam Stajskal, give him a follow on Twitter. You won't regret it. Okay, so, you know, as much as we, so you just said something very important there. This is a time period where sometimes it's not necessarily about the actual dollars and cents, but it's about relationships. In the case of the Bundesliga and the Premier League, and we can talk a little bit about the Premier League a bit later in the show, but, you know, there are huge TV contracts there to execute and get money. Right now, from a financial perspective, talk to me about Major League Soccer. And then related to the TV packages.
Yeah, so I mean, the deal is, I believe, $720 million. Forgive me, I can't remember correctly if it's 8 years or 9 years, but either way, it's not that big of a difference. It's either $80 million a year in revenue from the American broadcasters or $90 million a year in revenue from the American broadcasters for the entire league. There's 26 teams in MLS. Yeah. You know, so you're looking at around $3 million per team, $3-4 million per team. That's really just, I mean, it's not that much in the grand scheme of things. You know, other sports, you're talking about $1 billion a year in terms of TV money, right? That's an entirely different scale. So most of MLS's income on the club level comes from game day. It comes from tickets. It comes from concessions. It comes from parking, all of that stuff. It comes from sponsorships and elements that are tied to game days, hosting home games. So all of that's out the window, and MLS is hurting. And, you know, kind of the next thing is trying to get games on TV so you can activate some of those sponsorship elements that I was just referred to.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be difficult, right? You know, one thing that has come up a lot with in conversations that I had today was, you know, if you do this deal in Orlando and a lot of the games are on ESPN, well, that's a national broadcast. That's great for exposure, don't get me wrong. But from the perspective of individual clubs, they're not able to do their local broadcasts then. And if they're not able to do their local broadcasts, they're not able to take care of the local sponsors, which is going to affect them in terms of, you know, giving them kind of free sponsorship inventory and making good on their contracts and commitments, maybe in 2021 or 2022. So this is going to have kind of long-term, long-range effects, even if Orlando happens. So it's going to be pretty interesting, and that's why the next TV deal is so important, to kind of give MLS a little bit more income, a little less reliance on game day revenues, and just kind of more security and more money. To go out and be the best league it can be.
Now, I know there's also contingency plans being discussed with all these hypothetical situations where teams would get back in stadiums. So I would assume there's also a lot of discussion around social distancing, how many people can come to games. I would assume there's days and parts of days dedicated to that as well.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to be totally honest, I haven't had many discussions about that stuff. The focus right now, from the league perspective and from the perspective of most of these individual clubs, is whether or not Orlando is going to happen and how to best kind of plan and manage that. And, you know, in terms of crowds, that's going to vary state by state or province when you when you're talking about Canada, and city by city even. You know, I'm not sure what kind of the laws are down there in Texas, and but I know they're different from where I am in New York, and those are different from in Florida, and so that's going to depend on where you're at when crowds can return. And I don't see that happening in, say, California this year, just based on everything that's been said and is going on with the government out there. So it's going to be interesting to see how the league handles that, right? I would imagine they'll let fans in as soon as possible or as soon as it's legal in each market. But what's the appetite going to be for that? You know, it's just going to be really interesting to see how all this plays out. The kind of possibilities are infinite here. In not such a good way.
Now, I did hear that California governor yesterday, Gavin Newsom, announced that pro sports would return the first week of June in the state. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, not in front of crowds. Yeah. So, right. Yes, they can start to do closed-door things in stadiums. And New York and I think Texas had announced.
But that was a pretty big deal because, you know, most people were thinking California was, you know, done.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty big sea change for them.
It's crazy because, you know, today you've got Notre Dame announcing that they're going to bring students back on campus 2 weeks early in August. University of South Carolina, Purdue, these are all places with big football programs. They're all on board with, you know, having classes and people back on campus. So it's so all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
All right, Sam Stachel joining us from The Athletic. What about the transfer market now? And what about that with MLS teams and rosters? I mean, is everybody pretty much kind of be, unless they do deals within the league, pretty much stuck with what they got roster-wise?
I mean, again, who knows, right? The transfer market is going to be unlike anything we've seen in the past few years, right? A lot of clubs around the world aren't going to be in positions where they can go out and buy players. I think the market is going to be depressed in general. Prices will go down in terms of fees. You know, whether or not you'll be able to find discounts, you know, I'm not so sure, just because, you know, relative to revenue, the prices will probably be somewhat in line, right? But the one interesting thing regarding this for MLS is MLS owners are very, very, very strong financially, by and large. You know, you're talking about billionaires here in a lot of cases, and that's not how it works for a lot of clubs around the world. So even if they're not bringing in any revenue right now, if they so choose, they can go out and spend in the transfer market whenever this comes back online. And it is going to be interesting because the prices should be lower, and you're going to have situations where clubs in different countries around the world, you know, I think South America will probably be pretty ripe for this, are going to have to sell players just to get wages off the books and to start to generate some cash. They'll have to sell in order to pay the bills and stay solvent. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that should, I think, create a market where prices will be driven down. And if MLS wants to, they should be able to take advantage of that, as long as they're, of course, within the roster rules, right? So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I don't know if the attitudes of owners will allow for that to happen. I imagine that'll be a club-by-club thing. But, you know, there'll be some opportunity there. These are very wealthy individuals who, while they'll be hurting thanks to the economic downturn and the coronavirus, they're not hurting on any level that a lot of clubs around the world will be hurting. So,
these are intelligent men who will be looking for deals. Now, that can get close to home here in Houston. So let me take you to Albert Elise. Here's a guy that you know, could leave on a free, and now he's probably going to be undervalued based on everything that's going on, and it's likely he's going to end up somewhere else come January.
He'll certainly have that option, right? Yeah. Maybe Houston step up and make him an offer that no one else matches, and he decides to stay, right? There's always that possibility.
Of course.
I think that would be a little surprising, given the track record. It's going to be very, very interesting. I mean, you mentioned he's out of contract at the end of the year and he can leave for free. And, you know, once you get 6 months out, before the contract ends, you can start negotiating a pre-contract. So you can agree to terms and then leave once the contract expires. I don't know if that's going to be affected at all by all of this going on. You know, obviously the transfer windows are probably going to have to shift, for most of the rest of the world because they'll be playing during them. And that's not kind of the idea for the summer transfer window in Europe. So maybe that'll change. But it's not a great position to be in if you're the Dynamo, unless you can somehow get them to agree to an extension now. So that'll be interesting.
Sam, always informative. Great stuff. Thank you so much for making the effort to come on the program. I appreciate it. You are a part of tonight's show number 11 from the home studio during COVID-19. So, thank you.
It's been a while already, hasn't it? Well, thanks for having me on, Glenn. I appreciate it.
You're the best. Sam Stachkul. Catch him at The Athletic. Get him on Twitter as well, at Sam Stachkul. Man, very informative. By the way, on Albert Delis, he was on a show in Honduras via Zoom called Con Pineda Chacon, who you'll remember from the Miami Fusion. It was a Zoom on a TV show in Honduras. He said the Dynamo bought him for $4.5 million from Monterrey, and he again reiterated the fact that he wants to get to Europe. So the Panther speaking out on Honduran television. When we come back, the president of the Houston Dynamo, John Walker, joins me.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
They knew that they would have to defend today with that very potent front line that Dortmund have got. Can they keep it up for the full 90, though? Hazard's ball, Erling Haaland's 1-0. Classic piece of Dortmund attacking, breaks the deadlock. It can be so simple. A run, a pass, and a finish. Haaland is loaded with finishes.
Ghost games in Germany. You could hear the piped-in music after the goal, but very unique moment in the history of the Bundesliga and sports and in our lives right now. COVID-19, this is show number 11 from the home studio, and we're pleased to welcome in right now. He is the Dynamo president. He's been a very busy man, so we appreciate him coming on tonight. John Walker joins us. Hey, John.
The Sultan of Soccer, Glenn Davis, how are you?
I thought, who was the Sultan? That was the Babe, right? The Sultan of Swing?
It was, the Sultan of SWAT, yeah.
SWAT. Sultan of Swing. Sultan of Swings was Mark Knopfler in Dire Straits, that great song.
There you go.
See, this is what happens when the days are driving together, John.
No doubt. Boy, it's good to hear your voice, though.
Nice to hear yours, too. How's your family doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you for asking, and hoping all the listeners out there are safe and staying healthy, and we're getting through it day by day like everybody else, and we just have to stick with it.
Yeah, and I know you're just inundated daily on the phone, meetings via the computer, via Zoom. What could you just in general say about your days right now, and what are some of the priorities? Obviously, Orlando, I think, is one of them. Let me just give you a platform to kind of talk about what's going on in your world, in the Houston Dynamo world, and the world of Major League Soccer.
Yeah, it's been, I think we're in our 10th week now, working remotely as a staff. And I think we've all settled in. We're in constant communication. I think I talk with my staff more frequently now than I did when we were in the office. It seems to be nonstop. It's 7:30 at night tonight, and, we're still going, and my first meeting this morning was at 8:30, so we keep after it. But it's been really good to stay connected and communicated with folks. The league has been, I think, very, very good at keeping the teams, engaged, a part of the conversation about, the way forward. And although, details and specifics have been hard to lock down just because of the unknown of the pandemic, we are connected, and I think I've developed some pretty good relationships with some of my counterparts around the league that maybe I didn't have before, which has been good. Mm-hmm. But you know what I miss, Glenn, is I miss the personal nature of you know, running into somebody out at, you know, at a restaurant, you know, who wants to talk soccer, or certainly at BBVA Stadium when we're having matches and a season ticket holder will stop me or a supporter will stop me and we get, you know, just to talk about what's going on. And that part's been, you know, a big shift. And that, I really look forward to when that that comes back.
Speaking of John Walker, president of the Houston Dynamo, I'm sure you, like every pro league in the United States and leagues around the world, had a real eye on the Bundesliga restart this weekend. Some thoughts on that, and how much you know, observation and how much was taken into account in the execution of those games by the Bundesliga from a confidence standpoint, you know, from Major League Soccer?
Well, I think, you know, I was privy to getting a copy of their return to play document in terms of their safety and security and health and well-being of everybody involved. And it was, as you can imagine, it was extremely sophisticated. So there's an awful lot of learnings, I think, there just from when we get back to playing in our home stadiums, you know, what that might look like to keep everybody safe, socially distanced and the like. But I think in the United States and for MLS and many of the other sports, although, you know, we may return to play at some point with no fans, I think we will get to a point where we will have fans in our stadium, albeit socially distanced. And who knows, when we come back and start playing games in Houston, that may be the way we start. So there's still an awful lot of unknowns.
John Walker, Dynamo president. You know, the Wall Street Journal had an amazing article today with the athletic director of Texas A&M, and he was talking about the fact, you know, they draw 100,000 people, they've got 85,000 season ticket holders, and all these challenges that he's going to have with social distancing. They're not going to be able to do their traditions. You know, how are you going to pick the people that can go to the games if you have 85,000 loyal season ticket holders? Are these things that you guys are thinking about right now when it comes to the logistics of, you know, I know we're looking at Orlando first, but hypothetically, being on the timetable of the virus, you have to look out as well, right?
No, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up, you know, Ross and what it is his comments were, because I've known him for a long time. He's a really good guy. But we, you know, I've seen some manifests for stadiums across MLS, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and of course what Ross said about Texas A&M. And in just about each one of those scenarios, I would say that the general average is to keep everybody safe and socially distanced, you can get maybe 20 to 25% of your capacity into a stadium and still keep everybody safe. So that, you know, that presents some tremendous challenges for, you know, as you mentioned, season ticket members, and where do they sit? Because in many cases, they may not be able to sit in their same seats. You know, who gets to go? Because in Ross's case, you know, certainly he's not going to be able to get 85,000, you know, season ticket members in there if he's only got the 20-25% capacity. So you get into a real complex process for making sure that it's fairly and equitably done. Everybody gets taken care of as best that you can. And you just hope, you know, you really hope that the fans understand. Because, you know, they pay their hard-earned money to become season ticket holders or members of your club and, you know, want the right to be able to sit in their seat and go to every match. But it may not manifest itself that way when we come out of this. So there'll certainly be an education process as a part of it. We're working really hard at what our plan may be in the event we have that opportunity, and we certainly hope that we do, you know, as a sort of an interim step to getting back to normalcy.
Well, you know, in the case of A&M and Dortmund, who draws 80,000, I mean, it was surreal for me to see Dortmund in an empty stadium with one of the greatest fan bases in the world in any sport. But maybe there's a way you can sort of rotate people. Maybe you're not going to go to every game, but you're going to get to games. You know, maybe if it's A&M and it's 20,000 people out of 100, this you know, you got to hope there's enough game when it comes to college football. But for soccer, there certainly could be. I don't know. But
yeah,
anyway.
You have to. You have to do it based on some sort of priority system or you know, tenure as a member. A lot of different ways to skin the cat there. But, you know, hopefully – you know, we will have had enough time by the time that that happens here in Houston, that we can put a thoughtful plan together, get it well, you know, communicated to fans. And I'm just hopeful that, you know, maybe the next time we're speaking, that we can talk about that in terms of it actually happening, because right now everything seems to be a bit of a moving target, and some, there's a lot of gray area.
Yeah, and these questions for my listeners, all in the context of what is going on right now, because I just can imagine how many hypotheticals you guys are going through every day, because you have to be prepared for everything and anything in the unknown. Let's say we get back to Orlando, and a Dynamo player comes to you and says, "Mr. Walker, I don't want to play. I'm concerned about my health. It's a crisis." What is going to happen then?
Yeah, great question, and I know one that the league is taking very seriously. And it's not just the players, right? It's the staff as well.
Sure.
We have coaches and trainers and equipment managers and all that. And so it's certainly has elevated itself as one of the critical issues here to bringing people back to action. And, you know, in terms of the players themselves, I mean, you know, that I would guess that would be part of a conversation with the Players Association as to how, you know, how that would be handled. I think, you know, in general, you know, our thought is, as a club, is, you know, we want to be flexible and we want to be, you know, compassionate to what this reality is for people. And so, you know, I think we would want to work with people. We would want to try and be flexible. You know, at the same time, you know, if we're getting back after it, you know, there could be a lot at stake. So there's an awful lot to consider. I know that's a roundabout answer, but these are uncharted waters.
So we saw that Notre Dame is going to bring students back 2 weeks early. I'm assuming they're trying to play college football. We saw that Purdue, University of South Carolina, or others that are talking like this. And then with the Bundesliga launch this weekend, and, you know, in your conversations this week with the variety of people you're talking to, from league officials to your own staff, was there a little boost of confidence off what people saw this weekend?
Oh, very much so. I mean, there was so much sort of, you know, lack of clarity, lack of movement, lack of action in terms of talks about replaying, the fact that now there are some, you know, there are some stakes in the ground. There was a PGA event this week, or at least a skins game. There was a NASCAR event this weekend. Bundesliga played. It tremendously created a lot of energy, I think, within our club to get back to action. And, you know, we have to temper that a little bit with some patience, because it still may be a while before we get there. But, you know, versus the other first 8 weeks of this pandemic, it was certainly an awful lot of, you know, more excitement in the conversations, and you know, we're just really looking forward to getting back to play. You know, as you remember, Glenn, and I, you know, I hate to ramble a little bit, but we had a tremendous amount of momentum coming into this season with Darwin and Tab, and
yep,
you know, the sold out game against the Galaxy and Chicharito in town. We set a record that night, that afternoon, for the highest grossing game in the history of the Dynamo. And season tickets were up, supporter section is back, and it's, you know, we can't wait for this to sort of lift, and we can get back and keep building on that momentum.
Yeah, geez, it's hard to believe that there were two games played already. And it sounds like Todd Ramos, the whole staff, and everybody on that side of it who's set up this, you know, when I look at some of the videos and how the players have to come in staggered and all the detail that goes into this, you know, much like the Bundesliga, everybody has to pull in the same direction, because if you have a few people that get loose and, you know, break protocol, that's a problem.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there are no guarantees, even if you follow the protocol. I mean, there could be some sort of, you know, very isolated incident that you know, reaches out and bites you. But I will tell you this, our technical staff and the plan that they put together along with our stadium operations staff was one that was submitted to MLS, was submitted to the city and the county. I mean, we got high marks for everything that we were doing, and it's actually being used as an example here locally by some of the other clubs. And so I feel very confident that we put all the work in and we're doing all the right things. But, But you're right. It's not the norm, and hopefully it won't be the norm for long. But it's where we are today, so we have to make the best of it.
And I know you. This will be a question I just want to ask. I don't know how you're going to answer it. Do you think Orlando's going to happen?
Well, you know, I hope so. You know, I think the league has been very thoughtful about it, and it is a way to get us all back into a position to have some meaningful competition, which I think is the goal. And you know, if we wait until every market has sort of this pandemic more under control and people can travel to all cities within our league, if we wait until that happens, it could be, you know, many more months just because of the differences in the level of you know, exposure that some of these markets have. So to find a place where we can get everybody in action that is in a controlled and a safe environment, it makes a lot of sense to me. And so I hope it happens. And, you know, every day we get another update about the logistics and all the work that's being done behind the scenes. I'm very hopeful, Glenn.
John, tremendous interview, doing double duty today. Thank you. Our listeners, I'm sure, are very appreciative of you taking the time to come on after a long day. So thank you very much.
You bet, sir. Happy to do it.
All right. That's John Walker, president of the Houston Dynamo. Some good information there. Yeah, we're going to keep going. And this is why you got a good producer. Because we brought up Mark Knopfler, Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing. Not the Sultan of Swat, the Babe. And Tyler Scott pulls this like magic. This is radio history here, our 11th COVID-19 show. I got a dog laying on the ground here, thinking about running upstairs and making a gin and tonic and running back down. Man, I'd love to be back in that studio. Calling soccer games, too, on TV. I'm missing that, and I know a lot of people are. All right, we'll take a break here. My fellow commentator's missing that. We'll take a break here. John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, presenting sponsor of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Thank you, John. Thank you, Daspit Law Firm, for bringing soccer to the radio.
ESPN 97.5.